Yay! Yeah. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Art and Labor.
Yeah.
This is the podcast about art and about labor.
This is a podcast about the ongoing struggle to survive as an art or cultural worker. I'm OK Fox.
And I'm Lucia Love. Art workers of the world unite. We have a contest.
Do we?
Yeah, we do. We have a contest, actually. So we are asking all of the doodle bitches to draw a picture of what it will look like when all of the art workers of the world unite. This is a contest where you can win.
We have stuff. We have a mug.
Oh yeah, we have a. You can win a mug. Mug.
Or a shirt.
Wait.
Or a Plub sticker. You could win Plub. Plub, the best boy, the world's best boy, Plub. Everyone's favorite man, Plub.
You could win the best boy. Shiny, sparkly Plub sticker.
Listeners of the Premium Snackcast, by the way, we have a Premium Snackcast behind our paywall. Our paywall is pick your poison, d.rip/artandlaborpod. No, art and labor. You got the URL wrong. Or patreon.com/artandlabor. And we have a snack cast where we just eat chips and gossip.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like basically another episode of the show. But it's a lot more like loosey-goosey.
Oh, we just hang.
And there's crunching and munching sounds.
Yeah. So it's like joking around, I guess. Maybe it was on the snack cast. It was like...
Yes.
But I think it should be for real. Like...
I think the contest was on the regular, but I was going to say that we didn't we play Plub and talk about Plub on the...
Oh, yeah,
we
yeah,
did.
Yeah, we did.
That was on the snack
cast. And then we ate cool Japanese snacks.
Yeah, so Plub is a... A boy pop star from Thailand.
A beautiful boy.
Who I've heard intel is now living in New York City and is a beautiful man.
So listen, I think our age. Folks, you're going to get the chance to alert Plub to your knowledge of him.
Plub
if you have
excellent.
One of these stickers.
If you have a friend from Thailand, they know who Plub is. Like he's a very famous boy over there. But his music kicks ass.
It's so good. And so he's such an angel baby. Like
it's so good.
I'm still shocked.
I love Plub. Plub Club.
Plub Club.
Plub Club.
You can't not love the boy. He's so wonderful. Just sitting in like a toy store window and like I just want to take him home. He's so cute.
Oh my god. And Plub means persimmon, so that's delightful.
Oh my gosh. So yeah. He's got like vitamin C. This is good boy.
Oh my god. Yeah, it's been a really good day today. I ran into Jack Allison and Kate Raft on the street.
Hell yeah. Like,
it was so cool. I was so psyched about that because I am a big Struggle Session fan for a long time, and like I keep like missing any time they do something in New York. I don't like leave New York that often, but it keeps like timing out really badly for me. Because I'm going to Toronto for TCAF this weekend, and they're doing a live Struggle Session that weekend. But I was just so happy to see Jack on the street because I'm like, oh my god,
yes,
because
not just internet friends.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
Also run into the friend on the street.
Like I watch your Twitch show like every morning, basically. Like,
oh,
it's
whoa,
like so weird. Like,
wake up with Jack.
I literally do because I wake up at like. I wake up at like 9 or like 9:30, sometimes a little earlier, but then there, because his show is Jack AM, and in LA, it's like properly like in the morning, a morning show.
But for me,
this is still my morning, even though I'm on the East Coast.
It's so chill.
It airs at like 10:30 or something, and I watch it because Jack Allison, for people who don't know, is like extremely vocally like lefty Hollywood person, like grew up in Hollywood and then like worked for Jimmy Kimmel and like all this shit, and but then like is like extremely passionate online about like calling out these like elitist rich Hollywood people And their neoliberal bullshit.
That's sick.
And it's like really, really good Twitter follow. It's very amazing. Like, I was telling Lucia this before we recorded, but like, Jack's most recent thing was like, one of his most recent like bigger things was he got into a beef with James Corden, because like James Corden literally showed up to a WGA meeting, like union meeting. He's a fucking employer.
He
shows up to the WGA meeting and is like, I think there should be a program for to hire young writers, you know, because that, you know, basically being like, I don't want to pay young writers the union rates.
Yeah, he took his, he like busted in halfway through the meeting, and then he had his plastic sunglasses on, and he turned his chair backwards, and he said, listen, kids.
Come on.
You know what's cool? Working for 50 cents on the dollar. Whoa.
I want to hire young people, but I can't because of the union rates. So what if, you know, just spitball in here, we had a bullshit neoliberal garbage program internship.
He took his hand out of his velvet glove. And he reached into his breast pocket, and with his hairy knuckles, he pulled out a cigar, and he said, kids, you know I want to hire you. You know I want to hire every single one of you, but you know what? You're not worth a dime to me.
Oh, my God. Here, I'm also spitballing. I have a really good idea. What if we slash your fucking salary in half, and then you can hire whoever you want?
Hey, I got an idea. What about you kids? You love roommates, right? How about everybody goes to hell? That's good news. You know what I'm saying? You want to write about something?
My name is Jimmy Corden. I'm from New York.
Yo, my name is Jimmy. Yeah, I'm from England.
Bristol. Have you heard of it?
Ye old English town, beautiful, beautiful misty skies. I love fish and chips.
I'm from Bristol. I'm walking here.
I love cut rate writers.
But yeah, Jack like called him out, and like he like, so then James Corden had to like put his foot in his mouth and like be like, that's not what I meant. Like, blah, 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 blah. I would never, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, that's what you did. All I was saying was like, what you did.
Yeah.
And like, that's like,
it's like if somebody just literally says, like, wait, brah, I think you maybe mentioned this like just 10 seconds ago and it sounds bad coming out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Maybe you didn't mean what you just said, or did you?
But you did do it. You did that.
You wanna look at that? Like, no. No comment. Never happened.
It's like, just like, yeah. But Jack's Twitter is extremely entertaining. Like, just like, all sorts of like garbage, like, Hollywood people just being like, oh, you're just bitter, blah, blah, blah. But it's just like, no, it's like, he's like very principled. I really respect and admire that, because he quit a really schwanky job.
Hell yeah.
It's just like,
principles.
I can't, principles, baby.
Okay, speaking of, industry, I didn't run into anybody on the street. I did have a really crazy industry day.
Yeah, I want to hear about it, because this is like literally what our podcast is about.
Okay, so the piece that is the funding for the arts thing, which I'm now working on expanding and getting more interviews on, which is very, I'm stoked. I'm just going to try and dive deeper into the NEA stuff. But so I sent like this 6-page piece out and was like, hey, okay, who's interested in this? And, I have a press person who's been, like, guiding me through finding different outlets that might be interested in stuff. And, like, the whole process has honestly been an amazing learning experience. And I know it would be cool to be paid for that stuff. But, like, I understand that you can't just make stuff work for you immediately, because this is the way the world is, and I've just been really, really super grateful for, hey, like, you understanding.
Got, you got flown to Chicago for free. That's like a $200 value.
I know, right? Well, I did drink my weight, you know. Guy got in there with the little mini pizzas and stuff.
Hell yeah, that sounds delightful.
Hell yeah. No, I mean, it's been an amazing experience that I wouldn't have had if we were not, like, approached. And I'm like,
well,
I'm
actually, we
so
applied
amazed.
To a thing. That's
oh.
the thing.
Oh, okay.
We applied to a thing and we didn't get it. But then,
oh, but then they
approached us
and like,
this other
hey,
group.
What about this?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So all that's right. kind of what happened. I
so
think.
So there's like a lot of people around and everybody's yeah. just like, hey, you could write. So the 6-page thing that I did end up writing and I'm going to keep expanding on and actually going in a totally different direction first got whittled down to 3 pages. And I was like, oh, okay, they just want to know about the event. Like, let me try and narrow out, like, all of the context and just try to, like, talk about the thing that happened and have the reading time for people. And then I sent it out to these editors and they were like, this, like, is great and all, but what if I rewrite it myself and it's 1.5 pages? And I'm just like, what?
It's like basically like SponCon for this event. Like,
yeah, so that's what's coming down the pipeline. And I was like, this is very strange and I don't feel comfortable putting my name on a thing that doesn't have like the bridge to the point that I want to make.
Yeah.
Because this is all just... You know, like the even the quotes from people were changed yeah. around. And I'm like, what? No, I literally got oh a recorded quote from the person that I'm quoting. And this is literally word for word what they're saying.
This is what writing is not like a glorified fucking press release. It has a fucking editorial policy and vision. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I don't know what people want. Like,
and this is like, you know, getting to know more about this process has been really enlightening because I now am looking at all of these other articles and wondering, like, you know, what the fuck is the news? Like, what am I ever reading if this is what is happening to writers, like, constantly?
Yeah, and, like, Citations Needed talks about this, right?
Yes.
Like, basically just, like, rewriting press releases that the police write themselves, for mm-hmm. example. Like, and, it, you know, it's not a big surprise, shocker, other industries do it, like... too. Like,
yeah.
Especially art, like, because everything is a press release in art, but...
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. at least in art, it's sort of like, oh, I just want to get the feeling. I just want to, like, feel what the art is about. Mm. Ooh, it feels interesting. But, like, that's cool. That's enough for me to get in the door. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, like, this is not... This is not my news. Just want to
yeah.
let everyone know that there's yeah. a piece that, I, you know, I sent it, and they're like, hey, well, we wrote it and, you know, think about it, but we're, you know, we need to put a thing out. So, like, maybe this will just be it. And I'm like, please wait.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe it'll just be out there in a way that I'm like, I didn't even write that. Those people didn't even say that. Amazing.
Yeah, that is incredible.
Yeah.
Are we going to release this one wide, or should we put this behind the paywall?
I would say paywall.
Okay.
I would say paywall.
I don't know. I kind of want to just release it.
I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah. I didn't say anything. I'm, like, I'm fascinated yeah. by this whole experience.
I think people,
and, like,
people should know. I mean, I think people do know, like, a little about that, but, like, I think it's an interesting perspective. And
I mean, like, it makes me actually, like, I'm so intrigued by this. Like, I want to get deeper into it, and I want to know how... to actually, like, bring a more holistic experience into the writing realm, because it's like, no, like, I don't know what to say, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I was there and I talked to these people and they directed me towards, like,
they should just, like, tell you, can you write a personal essay about this event?
Yeah.
'Cause that's what they want, it sounds like. And it's just like,
it's wild. I don't know. Yeah, and it's been this sort of weird experience that, like, I'm like, oh, am I bad at this or something? And I'm like, no, actually, like, you know, I don't think so. This is just a completely different piece that they're looking for. And, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm amazed. And if anybody hears this and they're like upset, I'm like, I don't know what to tell anyone. Like, that I started out with 6 pages. It got whittled down to 1.5. Like, that's what happened. You know, it's not for nothing. It's not like I'm a lazy person or something. I'm like going researching the beginnings of all of these situations. I'm like, how do I make this like really comprehensive for people?
No, I think a lot of our listeners like have published here or there, and like I think people are going to be interested. I don't think you're going to get any weird pushback. I think you'll just get people being like, yeah, it's weird. Isn't it weird?
It's like happening all over the place. And like, yeah, I would rather people know that this is not the way that my brain works. And it doesn't sound like the way that I talk or the way that thoughts are formulated in this concentration of neurons. It's just weird.
It is so weird. Navigating the media landscape, like my stepsister is like a media person, and it just seems like such a weird nightmare to navigate, like the native advertisements that are also articles mixed with like the editorial things and then the weird lines between that. I mean, I know working for art form, people are like, it's very separate, but it's like, it's not that separate.
Mm-mm. No,
it's really not that separate.
All this stuff is, it's like a leveling of the field, or like, because everyone is so concerned with maintaining their traffic and like understanding how, I don't know, what is it? They have to make a, do they make money on clicks or something? Or like they have to sell stuff to advertisers, and like advertisers are afraid of connecting to people who have opinions.
I'm going to get into the brain of a marketing person for this event, right? Or for the NEA or whatever.
Well, no, like, yeah, because the NEA is totally scrapped out of this. Everything about galleries is scrapped out. Everything about the NEA is scrapped out. It's basically just like,
yeah,
this event exists.
The thing with, I don't want to get too much into art philanthropy because I know we have like a whole episode plan, like to get more in depth about this.
Oh, no. Yeah.
But like,
I mean, that's all I want to talk about right now. I'm like totally obsessed with what is happening.
Totally. But like, if I'm going to get in the brain of a marketer, philanthropist.
It's a king.
I want to get a return on my investment. So yes, I will give $10,000 to 5 artists or whatever the fuck. But I want to see that money come back to me, baby. So,
well, that's the weird thing though, is that that doesn't really play into whatever I'm doing. Like when you participate in philanthropy, then the ways that you get a return is just filing your own taxes. Like,
right, of course, and the taxes.
You know, it's sort of more, it's more of like a private relationship that these people are building with creative communities where they end up basically becoming like sponsors of artists who are brought in from their communities, right? So it's like, the people who are awarded something from the United States artists, like they receive $50,000 because the people around them were like alerting this organization to the fact that their work merits some kind of like a fortification, some kind of attention. And like a lot of the times, so like the people who win, a couple of them will be well-known artists, and it'll just be because of the nomination process. Like people from Brooklyn, you know, it's like Juliana Huxtable was one of them, and it was because people were all like, yeah, you know, like you know, this one needs something, and like, hey, they're good. But then there were these other people who are like, you know, it's like, I run a community theater in Alaska for people who are disabled, and everyone around me sees what I'm doing, and they think I need some help, and now I'm here in Chicago, and I'm meeting all these donors and stuff, and the donors are like, how's it going in Alaska? Oh, that's crazy. I read an article about that, and I care. And there is this weird, like, personal aspect to it that when you're there with people, they're like, they're like, oh, damn. Like, you know, it's like you watch artists get extremely emotional and like have these sort of, you know, they're like blessed, you know, they're like, oh my God, wow. Like, I don't have to be a waitress for the next 2 years.
We've talked about this before, but it's like sometimes like just like awarding like an artist, like even just $500 like changes their fucking life for like. Like, and it's such, it can be such a small amount of money. It's like, it's just nuts. It's nuts to me how far money, just giving people money goes.
Totally. It changes like, people's self-esteem.
It's wild.
And it, yeah, and it, and, yeah. And that's like, so that's like at the core of it is this really real raw emotion that happens when they're like, oh my God, like, I didn't know I was going to be able to keep doing this thing.
Yeah, but if I'm, like, a PR or marketing person for, like, an event, I want press about it. And so...
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of...
Well, they want to be like, look at... This thing is really great. And it's like, yeah, it's,
but if they really want...
It's complicated,
if they though. Really want buzz and press, they would just allow the writing about it to stand... what it as it is, like, because that actually makes genuine conversation, and it's not just like a vapid press release. I think that it actually would be more beneficial to the event
to like get an actual conversation started.
Yeah,
and that was like the initial intent was like, whoa, there's something really different going on in this transaction where people are put together for like, you know, 3 or 4 days, and all of the artists who receive this this money, they like all end up talking to each other, and some of them end up like collaborating, some of them, you know, it's like, and the feeling between them is all really genuine and intense, and like it's bizarro because it's like, oh, this is great. But then it's also like, what the hell is happening? Because I'm just in a room with like 50 people.
Right.
And then when you go back outside, you're like, oh, shit, the world is still insane and crappy. And like, what just happened back there? And like, what's going on out here? And then like, why is it so hard?
Yo, I feel like we're already dipping into like the reading that we wanted to
do. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Simulations, folks. We can make group hallucinations. And what are they? And how are they happening? And all of the boundaries between what we thought were inside and outside, they're all a part of it, man. We're in the fucking Matrix now.
So fans of the show will remember that we had... an episode where like half of it was lost to time.
Oh yeah.
And it was an episode both where we got high before recording and lost it. Like,
and
also
had like the best,
like the most insane
rambling conversation about social practice.
Yeah, it was our social practice episode.
It's a big one.
Which we do want to like properly re-record, and we have like a really good guest in mind now for that, which I think will make it.
I'm gonna keep expanding on it.
Yeah, and it's something that merits like a lot of discussion because it's something that's hindering the collective work power of art people, art workers, and cultural workers. I think.
Well, there's like two strands to everything, or I don't know. Reality is multivalent, and there are powers which hinder, and there are powers which serve to extend the goodwill of humanity. But, like, oh, it's so complicated. There's so many shades to everything. And why is it so hard to just tell people in a story how complex a thing is and how connected it is to all of these other strands. And
but like, but that's why we want to get into Baudrillard today. Even though he's a bit wacko and whatever. On our High Lost episode, like, I remember having a distinct like Lucia, wait a second.
Oh, yeah.
I just got it. I just understood. I just got it.
Yeah, you were like, I get the simulation.
I get it.
Oh, shit.
I get Baudrillard.
Like, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yo, we can make each other trip out. Dude, humans are crazy. Oh, my God.
It's just, like, wild. But yeah, we read a lot of Hito Strael on this podcast, and she's extremely influenced by him, of course. And
a lot of people are.
I mean, yeah. But
he was like the 90s.
Of course. Yeah. It's, yeah. I don't know.
It's crazy. Like Marxist theory got so, like, disintegrated at a certain point. It was like, oh, what if we, I mean, you know, just in the arts.
It was like
all these people going into, like, Dada and Fluxus and stuff, and they weren't, like, necessarily directly addressing anything except for, like, post-war trauma. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then somehow in the 70s, everything got, like, injected with the actual, like, hi, I'm a Marxist thinker in the arts, and I believe that we need to destroy the commodity object, and, like, we've got to stop thinking about ourselves in terms of luxury market, blah, market, luxury, blah. My art is a piece of paper. Mm. And, like, then that didn't work because people just sold the piece of paper.
Yeah, the piece of, like, yeah. We talked about this a little bit with, like, our really early episodes about Black Mask, but it's like, it's just like, isn't it fucking stupid that, like, the Black Mask zines or Black Mask, and then the other like radical anarchist zines, like, you know, get sold at white galleries now, you know,
and they all get like, and then it's like, oh no, you gotta put them in the little glass case and they're open to one page and you can,
it's like,
look,
they
at
will
it,
make printed but... matter, they will make printed matter. And then, like, yeah, we talked about Jakob Palafuso's How to Internet.
Yeah.
It's a good, like, video essay about this, you know, being like, you know, artists always go through this. They just reinvent it over and over again, like, whether it's, whether it's, like, you know, sculptors being like, we're going to use raw materials, you know, that workers use or whatever.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God, yo, that's made out of cement.
Yeah.
I stuck it to the man.
Yeah, or whatever. And or it's net artists being like, ew, the internet, widely accessible. No, they'll just...
Yeah. But there was this thing that happened, I feel like, in the... So it was like, okay, 70s, everyone was like, oh, yeah, hell yeah, mine's a piece of paper. Or, like, I took a photograph. Or, like, ooh, I'm just a performance artist. Wow. And now it's, like, fast forward a little bit, and you get to the 90s, and everyone's like, whoa, actually, the internet's new? We're freaking out? We have this utopian bent to everything, and we're just seeing everything, like, disintegrate into atoms and, like, and this little, like, connections between everything and like, what the hell even is, like, hyperlinking? Wow, I can't believe it. I'm in a chat room right now.
Yeah, acid, weed, mm-hmm. These sort of things.
Oh, yeah. That's my art. It's just acid and weed.
I don't know. I feel like... I feel like there could have been some good shit that happened in the 70s if people, like, didn't get so sucked into, like, the, like, sort of, like, you know, aestheticization of, like, hippie stuff and, like, I don't know, it just, and then all those people just grew up and became normal people. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I think at a certain point, people don't know how to change the world, because it would be an incredibly presumptuous position to take to be like, all right, no, everyone's a hippie. Or, you know what I mean? Like, where does any of this stuff go? Like, I don't know. Now everyone is flux. Like, I don't know. Everyone's just doing things and it's kind of neat. And, like, it changes the landscape for a moment. And then you have to continuously keep understanding that everything is in shift. You can't. Like, nothing is stable. So the thing that is revolutionary is never going to take you to a new place, because history is it's independent of us, you know? It's like, I'm just adrift in a river.
Yeah, yeah. Which I get the argument for, like, people should be building class consciousness, and that actually, like, a collectivized people power.
Oh, yeah.
Is what can actually enact change.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah, like, we can't just fashion ourselves or our environment into a revolution, but we can understand each other in a way that will enable us to collaborate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's, yeah. Because I don't hate, like, de-skilling or, like, I'm just doing performance artists because I don't want to be a commodity or whatever. Like, I don't hate that on its surface. I get that. It's just like the recognizing, like, you know, you actually can be turned into a commodity.
Yeah,
like, you actually
do performance because you're good at performance, but also realize that they're paying you for your performance if you do
or
it
if they're
to
not
live.
If they're, or if not they're not paying you, yeah. That's that matters,
then you should get paid.
Yeah. And you know, fuck, like, we're hitting on this before, with the William Morris reading a little bit, but, like, that balance between, like, art should be accessible to everybody and everybody should be able to have time to do it, and, like, art and craft is, like, a skill that should be, you know, properly compensated and,
yeah,
like, a labor force and taken seriously.
Yeah, totally. There should be room for people to be able to express themselves on any level and have a personal base and connection to their,
right,
to their communities. And then there should also be people who are allowed to own the means of their own production, make things from their souls. For the people to have,
yeah, slash
nice ass,
like,
shit.
Slash, like, you know, if we're under capitalism right now, maybe have a certain responsibility to, like, put out lefty propaganda. I don't know. Like, that's, like, also something to strike a balance with, I think. Depending on, like, what you do and, like, why you do it. Like, I think if you're making work that you're like, my work is political because it's about this, this, and this. It's like, okay, is it just being commodified and, like, just, like, what is it actually? And, like, what, is it mass movement building? Like, what, like, and that's, like, where we have, like, our big nuanced discussion about social practice art.
Yeah, totally. I almost feel like we're getting into it again.
I know.
It's just like, no, we've got time for this. We can do this.
We do.
We have time. No, it's cool because, you know, we were talking about the podcast and I was, like, having a meltdown because I'm just like, oh, damn, I'm tired and I got really sick and then you got sick and then it's like we're just, like, little human beings and there's no end in sight to the capitalist hellscape. So, you know, I had that, like, the little meltdown where I was like, oh my God, dude, oh my God, I'm getting older and I don't know what I'm doing. Oh my God. And then you were like, yeah, but this podcast rules because we're not just doing a thing. We're like talking. And this is how we maintain and build class consciousness. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's, like, valuable in itself. You got to keep doing that, because if you let go of the linchpin, I mean, for me, if I like let that go, then I'm just like drifting in a world trying to like make what I think is an appropriate amount of money, which I'm like, I don't know what the hell. Maybe I'll never feel like I have enough
money.
It's also
like, so we're so clownish because we're just like two anti-capitalists trying to like run a thing and talk about like compensation for creative labor, and then like we're like, we can barely compensate ourselves. Like,
yeah it just it gets really meta and embarrassing and like and really human and wonderful all at the same time. Just like, holy hell, dudes.
It reminds it like, you know, about the anarchist book fair that like used to happen in New York. I don't know if it, I think it's like taking a break maybe, but it's kind of a fucking mess.
Oh, yeah. Dude, anarchist. Yeah. Totally.
It's like that.
It's a joke. Holy shit.
But we're way more together than that.
Yeah. I mean, listen to our sound quality.
Oh, yeah. We at least got that down.
Yeah. We got some, you know, that's what it's all about. Art, you never get the full package. You know, those people that are all about the product and whatever, those are your Jeff Koonses, mm-hmm. and they got it. They got the money, whatever, but they don't get the soul.
Yes. Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
We're capturing soul in a bottle.
Yeah.
Putting it in a feed every day.
And
every week.
You could support us and support our souls.
Oh yeah, my gosh.
I don't know. I feel like such an idiot all the time, but it's great.
No, it kicks ass, and I'm just I love doing this show, and I love reading to people too. Like, and people like when we read. People like when we just read, I think.
Oh, that's good. They're like, "Please, information.
They like the William Morris.
Just the information, thanks."
But I think it's like sort of divided, because I think like there's a good chunk of our audience that are just like, you guys talk good.
Aww.
And then there's another chunk of the audience that are like, I love the episode where you're smart, actually.
Oh, like, yeah. Oh,
got it. Forget sometimes to do that.
Well, you know, we want to give everybody a little bit of the sample platter. Just, you know, here. We don't know what's going on, but here's now.
Oh, man. Well, should we read? We got like 20 minutes left and it's a short one.
I think we can do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So we'll go paragraph to paragraph, but so we're just for the listeners.
There's a book this time.
Yeah, we have one book. And we're gonna.
Do you wanna do page by page?
Okay, yeah, let's do page by page. Okay, yeah, so there'll be a little second where we just hand the book off to each other because. Sharesies. But here is Baudrillard, The Conspiracy of Art. And this was written in 1996, so the language is a little bit different. And we're gonna address that off the bat.
Yeah.
The illusion of desire has been lost in the ambient pornography, and contemporary art has lost the desire of illusion. In porn, nothing is left to desire. After the orgies and the liberation of all desires, we have moved into the transsexual, the transparency of sex, with signs and images erasing all its secrets and ambiguity. Transsexual in the sense that it now has nothing to do with the illusion of desire, only with the hyper-reality of the image. Which I'm, okay.
All right, guy.
Yeah, okay, all right. The same is true for art, which has also lost the desire for illusion and instead raises everything to aesthetic banality, becoming trans-aesthetic. For art, the orgy of modernity consisted in the heady deconstruction of the object and of representation. During that period, the aesthetic illusion remained very powerful, just as the illusion of desire was for sex. The energy of sexual difference, which moved through all the figures of desire, corresponded in art to the energy of disassociation from reality. This is cubism, abstraction, and expressionism. Both, however, corresponded to the will to crack the secret of desire and the secret of the object. Up until the disappearance of these two powerful configurations, the scene of desire, the scene of illusion, in favor of the same transsexual, transesthetic obscenity. Yeah, transesthetic obscenity. Mm, that's my band name.
It's my life, baby.
The obscenity of visibility. The relentless transparency of all things. In reality, there is no longer any pornography, since it is virtually everywhere. The essence of pornography permeates all visual and televisual techniques. And this is where I go off on saying, you guys, we live in a desire economy. And now everybody knows where I got it from in undergrad.
Yeah, I mean, oh, man. Okay.
Desire we'll get economy. Into it after it's a everywhere. Bit. Everything's pornography, you guys.
Oh, my God. Maybe we are just acting out of the comedy of art, just as other societies acted out the comedy of ideology, just as Italian society, though it is not alone, keeps acting out of the comedy of power, just as we keep acting out of the comedy of porn in the obscene advertising pictures of women's bodies, perpetual striptease, fantasies of exposed organs, sexual blackmail. If all this were true, it would indeed be unbearable. Fortunately, it is all too obvious to be true. The transparency is too good to be true. As for art, it is too superficial to be truly null and void. There must be some underlying mystery. Like for Anapomorphis, there must be an angle from which all of this useless excess of sex and signs become meaningful, but for the time being, we can only experience it with ironic indifference. In this unreality of porn, in this insignificance of art, there's a negative enigma and mysterious thread, or, who knows, an ironic form of our destiny? If everything becomes too obvious to be true, maybe there is still a chance for illusion. What lies behind this falsely transparent world? Another kind of intelligence or a terminal lobotomy. Modern art has managed to be part of the accursed share, a kind of dramatic alternative to reality, by translating the rush of unreality in reality. But what could art possibly mean in a world that has already become hyper-realist, cool, transparent, marketable? What can porn mean in a world made pornographic beforehand? All it can do is make a final paradoxical wink, the wink of reality laughing at itself in its most hyper-realist form, of sex laughing at itself in its most exhibitionist form, of art laughing at itself at its own disappearance in its most artificial form, irony. In any case, the dictatorship of images... God, sorry.
I know.
Is an ironic dictatorship. Okay, I want to read that again. In any case, the dictatorship of images is an ironic dictatorship. Okay, guy. yet this irony itself is no longer part of the accursed share. It now belongs to insider trading, the shameful and hidden complicity binding the artist who uses his or her aura of derision against the bewildered and doubtful masses. Irony is also part of the conspiracy of art.
Yeah, and irony is such a huge buzzword right now.
Yeah, like, no, that's great. Honestly, that's really good thing to digest in this current moment.
Yeah, because it's also, it's like this was the like proto-nihilist streak in our like popular culture that's just blossomed into like, you know, I'm too young to be in the grunge movement, and now I just go online and I like watch, I don't know, there's no Faces of Death anymore. There, it's just, you can watch Faces of Death everywhere.
Are we talking about Gen Xer mindset?
Well, yeah, I think like the Gen Xer mindset sort of like spread seeds into the kids who are just like shit posters now.
Yeah, just extreme, or they're either shit posters. I think shit posters at best, honestly, and then at worst, they're like Proud Boys.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, they're definitely like they're like pushing the boundaries to see if anything is even real. Yeah. They're like, hey, what if I just say like I killed your mom and like. skull flicker. Is that cool? Can I just say that?
Can I just...
I'm sorry if that offended anyone. I didn't do that to your mom.
Oh my God. No. That's what these dudes are like.
Just terrible.
It's really fucking frustrating to deal with Gen Xer people. It is extremely... It's like they miss the boat on empathy entirely, sort of.
Well, like the, yeah, and this is just the mentality that we're blanketing.
Of maybe course.
There are people
we love you, 40-year-olds that are our friends.
So. Oh, we love you. Yeah, it's okay. Thanks for the book recommendations.
No, it's not true for everybody. It's not definitely not true for everybody, but.
Yeah. Oh, damn. Yeah, I mean, honestly, nobody's an ageist around here. Okay. As long as art was making use of its own disappearance and the disappearance of its object, it still was a major enterprise. But art trying to recycle itself indefinitely by storming reality? The majority of contemporary art has attempted to do precisely that by confiscating banality, waste, and mediocrity as values and ideologies. These countless installations and performances are merely compromising with the state of things and with all the past forms of art history. Raising originality, banality, and nullity to the level of values or even to perverse aesthetic pleasure. That's not a full sentence. So I'm getting so, like, what the fuck? That's not a full sentence, you asshole. Where's your editor who let you publish that? Oh my God, I'm gonna die. Oh my God, we all are. Of course.
I'm gonna die in the simulation.
Yay! That means you come back in real life.
Great.
Okay. Of course, all of this mediocrity claims to transcend itself by moving art to a second ironic level, but it is just as empty and insignificant on the second as the first level. The passage to the aesthetic level salvages nothing. On the contrary, it is mediocrity squared. It claims to be null. I am null. I am null. And it truly is null. Therein lies all the duplicity of contemporary art, asserting nullity, insignificance, meaninglessness, striving for nullity when already null and void, striving for emptiness when already empty, claiming superficiality in superficial terms. See press release. Nullity, however, is a secret quality that cannot be claimed by just anyone. Insignificance, real insignificance, the victorious challenge to meaning, the shedding of sense, the art of the disappearance of meaning, is the rare quality of a few exceptional works that never strive for it. There is an initiatory form of nothingness or an initiatory form of evil. And then there are the inside traders, the counterfeiters of nullity, the snobs of nullity, of all those who prostitute nothingness to value, who prostitute evil for useful ends. The counterfeiters must not be allowed free rein. When nothing surfaces in signs, when nothingness emerges at the very heart of the sign system, that is the fundamental event of art. See my website, nothingisgoingtohappen.com.
Oh my God.
I'm such a sucker. I just am coming to how much of my brain has been gentrified by this person. He just moved right in. I'm like, oh yeah. But yeah. I also have the windshield stickers, meaning is pain.
Meaning is pain. I still have mine from when we first met, like, 6 years ago.
I know. I still got like huge sack of that. Oh hey, if anybody wants windshield stickers,
damn, we should give those away.
You want to, yeah, just screw with the simulation a little bit.
Yo, I am really liking this essay, to be honest.
It's dope.
Like, because it's getting like, you know, it's getting down to what we were talking about in the intro earlier, that like, you know, like there really isn't, there isn't a way to just remove yourself from your position, your material reality, your whatever.
Right.
You can't.
Yeah, you just have to try to operate within the structure you're bound to, but also, like, the concept of the, like, the value of things, or, like, the mysterious aura of the object, and, like, the nothingness that's actually behind it.
Yeah.
Is like, the engine for the aura? Like, is it... It's, like, the true nothingness is such a weird concept, because you try to imagine, like, the vacuum of space or something inside of a matter. I don't know. This stuff, it'll make you think in poems.
Yeah. So I'll keep going. The poetic operation is to make nothingness rise from the power of signs, not banality or indifference toward reality, but radical illusion. Warhol is thus truly null in the sense that he reintroduces nothingness into the heart of the image. He turns nullity and insignificance into an event that he changes into a fatal strategy of the image. He likes him for that. We hate right. him for that.
Yeah, he destroyed us. He destroyed our conversation. Our words just fall out of our faces now. Thanks, Warhol.
Other artists only have a commercial strategy of nullity, one to which they give a marketable form, the sentimental form of commodity, as Baudelaire said. They hide behind their own nullity and behind the metastasis of the discourse on art, which generously promotes this nullity as value within the art market as well, obviously. I'm glad you talked about this press release stuff this episode. In a way, it is worse than nothing because it means nothing, and nothing nonetheless exists, providing itself with all the right reasons to exist. This paranoia in collusion with art means that there is no longer any possible critical judgment, and only an amiable, necessarily genial sharing of nullity. Therein lies the conspiracy of art in its primal scene, transmitted by all the openings, hangings, exhibitions, restorations, and collections, donations, and speculations. And that cannot be undone in any known universe, since it has hidden itself from thought behind the mystification of images. Damn, that's good. the flip side of this duplicity is through the bluff on nullity to force people, a contrario, to give it all some importance and credit under the pretext that there is no way it could be so null that it must be hiding something. Contemporary art makes use of this uncertainty, the impossibility of grounding aesthetic value judgments, and speculates on the guilt of those who do not understand it or have not realized that there is nothing to understand.
Yes!
Another case of insider trading.
Sucker! The emperor has no clothes on.
That's really good.
In the end, one might also think that these people who are held in respect by art really got it, since their very bewilderment betrays an intuitive intelligence. They realize that they've been made victims of an abuse of power, that they have been denied access to the rules of the game and manipulated behind their backs. In other words, art has become involved not only from the financial point of view of the art market, but in the very management of aesthetic values, in the general process of insider trading. Art is not alone. Politics, economics, the news all benefit from the same complicity and ironic resignation from their consumers. Our admiration for painting results from a long process of adaptation that has taken place over centuries and for reasons that often have nothing to do with art or the mind. Painting created its receiver. It is basically a conventional relationship. And this is a quote from Dubuffet. The only quote, who is a painter? Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. He didn't have a problem with the relationship. Just wanted to say it is one. The only question is, how can such a machine continue to operate in the midst of critical disillusion and commercial frenzy? And if it does, how long will this conjuring act last? 100, 200 years? Will art have the right to a second interminable existence, like the secret services that, as we know, haven't had any secrets to steal or exchange for some time, but who will still continue to flourish in the utter superstition of their usefulness, perpetuating their own myth?
Great. That was great.
Yeah, tell us what you think. Oh, maybe that's another Dubuffet. I don't know. I'm like, is that the same Dubuffet? That's what I want to know. Now I want to fact check myself.
Oh, that's good. Good to fact check in real time.
Yeah.
I will say that, I think we're really on point with our lead up conversation to this essay. I think like we hit on, a lot of stuff that, he's talking about with, just like people just want to remove themselves. They just want to remove themselves, make true nothingness, but it's like they just become complicit in the insider trading of knowledge, like specialized knowledge or whatever.
And it's like removing yourself to reach like a true null, or like are we then like stepping into the search for objective nature? It's like is objective reality actually the nothingness behind everything? And like, I would say there's nature outside of humanity, but
yeah, of course.
Yeah, getting into like,
you're not a fucking egoist.
I didn't make this universe in my mind. I'm not a solipsist. Oh god.
Oh my god, that's what makes you a good
person. Yeah. It's pretty easy, folks. Just believe that the people around you are not filled with sand.
How must dudes just walk about in the world? Like, do you think he like actually likes Andy Warhol, or he just like admires his ability to do nothing properly?
I think that's it. But yeah. Do you want to get into the essay? I think we should. I mean, maybe not on this one. This will be a two-parter. Oh, okay. So I fact-checked myself. So this quote is from a Polish writer, Gombrowicz, Dubuffet. So he was trashing Dubuffet. Which is cool, because I never liked his paintings.
Oh, man. Well, I enjoy, going back to when we were... Because I like that having, like, conversation half the time and then reading a short essay. And I think we should just start incorporating that more into our every episode.
Yeah. It makes me feel... like I'm getting in my reading time too. Like, I love this stuff. I'm just excited for anyone who wants to go on the journey with us.
Please. I love it. And I meant to shout out before, hitozine.eu.
Yeah.
We got them in the mail.
Ow, 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 ow.
It's so funny.
The mail is so magical.
Oh man. It's so funny to get like, Hito Strael zine in the man.
Yeah, her face. It's just so shiny and happy.
Oh, man. And, like, and the covers are so funny. Like, the world's number one Hito Strael fanzine.
Yes. Like, probably. Only. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how. Maybe not.
No,
you are to us.
I love it. I love, like, the very specific...
Yeah, the most amazing, jaw-dropping factoids about your favorite girl, Hito Strael.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm excited to read more Baudrillard and like make my own grad school.
Yeah, fuck grad school, Jesus Christ. I mean, except for everyone who's going to grad school, And except for anyone who works at a grad school, and except for anyone who might accept one of us to a grad school, ugh, or allow us to work at one.
Well, that's a thing.
But also, fuck grad school.
I think we could get into grad school as like some sort of weird, like experimental, like theory program or
something. Well, that was remember when I was initially like, yo, we should apply to grad school as one person. Come on, let us in.
I would do it if we could stay in the city.
Yeah. I don't know. I would do it if we could go to California.
Ooh. I guess I could do it. I could just come back between semesters.
Yeah.
Grad school is only 2 years, so it's really not that bad.
Go to California. Take in the fires.
Oh, I don't know. There's a lot of places I want to go, but I also want to stay here in New York.
New York is always going to be there, but when are you going to get the chance to be surrounded by mountains of fire? You know?
What about the super bloom?
It's going to go out, you guys. It can't burn forever.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the super bloom is beautiful, though, too.
Well, should we wrap up? We just hit our mark.
We did it.
I honestly loved it. Everybody hit me up at TCAF. I printed new Art and Labor stickers. And
oh, hell yeah. I need some of those.
Have a couple of things.
For when I go to the bathroom.
Yeah. I used to be so good about printing them all the time, but I've like lapsed.
Well, it's our year anniversary and we're going to.
I brought like a million to Japan. I put them all over.
Yeah.
Tokyo.
Here we have a bunch of listeners from Tokyo.
I think people like the Japan app, so that's good.
Hell yeah. That's a little bit of exotic flavor for you.
Oh, man. And we did an episode around the world after that, too. We went to mm-hmm. Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stuff. So we've been.
So anyone who's complaining that we were too New York-centric can kiss.
Kiss.
Kiss each other.
Kiss each other.
Find each other and kiss.
Kiss each other.
Yeah. Kiss, 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 kiss.
You guys would get along.
You should just kiss, whiny. You don't like New York.
Anyway, reminder again, hit us up on that paywall. Join our Discord if you like us. DM us and I'll send you one. I don't care.
Hell yeah.
An invite or whatever.
And draw a picture of Workers of the World uniting. Who knows? I don't know. I'll draw you guys a picture if you draw me one.
Oh, man, yeah.
Trade ya.
Yeah, Lucia's Instagram's really good, @Lucia_love. Lucia posted all these, like, communist babes.
Oh, yeah, I'm just going commie babe right now, so it's if y'all want a commie babe drawing, I will make you one, so we can talk about it.
I'm making a psychotic communist zine about Knuckles the Echidna and Kurama from Yu Yu Hakusho.
Oh, good. It's good.
I've been working on.
Dude, we got so much, so much going on.
So, yeah, see you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in. Let's have fun.
See you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I get if you have an aeroplane that can fly the world and we can have a fantasy. It doesn't matter if you drive a limousine. It really doesn't matter if you drive for galaxy. I really don't care if you destroy a truck. I care if you just drive a limousine. It doesn't really matter if you drive a Ferrari. I really don't care cause I just love your company. Let's have fun. 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 Let's have fun, lots of fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun. Lots of fun.